on this Monday morning. Brent Loucks with you, filling in for Evan Bray. Evan's back in the chair tomorrow. Always enjoy spending some time with Ryan Brook. He's the moose man. He's the wild boar guy. Ryan is with the University of Saskatchewan, professor, graduate chair in the Department of Animal and Poultry Science with the University of Saskatchewan College of Agriculture and Bioresources. And we're getting a bit of an update on moose that are hanging too close to the city of Saskatoon. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, Brent, how are you?
I'm doing well. Always a pleasure talking to you. And I know it was about a year ago or so we spoke about these trail cameras that you'd set up in different locations in and around the city of Saskatoon. What are you finding on these wildlife cameras?
Well, these cameras are just unbelievable. Of course, they capture anything and everything that walks past the cameras. We have a few interesting human occurrences in front, but we won't talk.
Tell me more.
No, I will talk about moose, though. And one of the things that's sort of been really interesting is you don't really think of moose as being in cities. They are out in the boreal forest, right? But in fact, we, after 3 years of tracking, we have had, 249 photos of moose in the city already. And we just summarized that and wrote it up with my PhD student, Katie Harris. And we've been finding way more detections. And, we have only based on 3 years of data, but there was a substantial increase in moose occurrences during that time. So, we're seeing moose reproducing inside the boundary of the city of Saskatoon, which is very, very interesting. So we have established populations, not just occasional visitors.
When you say you have 249 moose photos from these 29 trail cameras, is that one moose that just is photogenic that you've got 249, or I'm guessing you're able to tell they are very different animals?
Yeah, well, of course, unfortunately, they're not tagged in any way, so we can't for sure know, but we've seen females with calves, we've seen juvenile males and females, and even some quite large males as well. And so, yeah, we've had quite a number of different occurrences for sure of, and these are, we've had 12 of the different cameras around the city of the 29 we've been running have had moose. So it isn't just one camera either. It's been spread around and some of these are well within, towards the core of the city.
Really? So is it I'm guessing it's the river valley where they find their cover, is it?
Well, it's interesting. They do to some degree, but a lot of it is also, like, I live down in Lakeview in the southeast, and we've had numerous moose come in through, and I think they follow Highway 11 right up into the city as well. And so they've also been around the train yards coming into that area. We've seen lots of animals. And one thing we do know for sure is that, in fact, right around this time, we may start to see an increase because moose have just wrapped up their birthing season. And what happens is before mom gives birth, if she has young with her from the previous year, she kicks them away and says, get out of here, I'm having a baby. And then those young ones, they've never been done anything except follow mom around. And so sure enough, they wander around and end up doing dumb things like walking into farmyards and getting into the city.
I recall the research you did years ago south of Saskatoon where you had tagged moose, and it was interesting to see the path that they would follow, the route that they would take. So when you think about moose in the city of Saskatoon, are they just passing through for the most point, or are they actually calling this home?
Well, it looks like some of them are resident, and certainly one indicator for us is once animals start having young in an area, we certainly see that as a strong indicator that they're sticking around and this is home. And we have numerous photos of females with young at heel, and so I think some are sticking around. Certainly, they're, one of the things we know that's clear is they're just not compatible with city life, maybe along the fringes and some of the farmland that abuts the city, but wandering around in cities, it just doesn't work. They have to go, right? So the province, as soon as they're reported, the province reacts and they capture them and move them, far out of the city, which is really the only way to go. They can be dangerous, of course. They can cause, moose vehicle collisions are hugely damaging and problematic. And, we had a neighbor here in Lakeview just down the street. They got in the gate somehow and the gate closed behind them. And so the moose just said, heck with this, and went out the west wall and took down the entire west fence of his yard. And then couldn't get to there and took out the neighbor's fence as well. So, Yeah, they're just not having them around right in the city just doesn't work. Bears, cougars, and moose are just not compatible with city life, unfortunately.
You mentioned the 249 moose photos. Any other wildlife that you picked up on these trail cam networks that maybe surprised you a bit as far as, you know, you mentioned cougars, bears, that sort of thing?
Well, I'm surprised we haven't seen any wild pigs yet. I think they're coming. Probably the most surprising we had so far was a couple of years ago. We had a black bear in the west end of the city on our cameras. That was quite surprising, given, you know, we're an island of a city in a sea of agriculture, and so when we get these big mammals, it's all of them are a little bit surprising, and certainly represent some changes going on. We have lots and lots of coyotes, and of course, coyotes would arguably be the biggest issue in the city, especially in the last year or so. There's been a lot of discussion about that. So we're hoping at some point we'll get some interest in this research. We can't really get the city or anybody to really pay attention to this research, and this is one of the reasons we're trying to promote it, because things like coyotes and moose are really important, and we've kind of been sharing our results but not really getting any traction. So hopefully at some point somebody wants to listen, and I would certainly hope in the future there'll be some interest in this. We have years of coyote data that would be hugely informative, but we haven't really worked it up yet, and to be frank with you, Brent, I don't know if we will unless we get some indication that anybody wants to hear what we have to say.
But what could they do? You know, it's wonderful that you've got all this data and information, but a city council looks at it and you show them these photos of moose in and around the city, you show them other wildlife. What potential answer would they have for that?
Well, it's a great question, and that's, you know, I think that a lot of that needs a lot of discussion with the general public, but certainly identifying high-risk areas is important, so we know these are the hot spots, and we keep seeing these over and over again, and so certainly for coyotes and moose and, well, the one bear so far, we know what these hot spots look like and where they are. We also can inform, I think, thinking about, you know, is this just a very rare situation that needs the occasional response, which is moose has been so far for the most part. I think coyotes have moved past that point where now they are, you know, we have lots of established coyotes. We have dens in the city. We know they're reproducing in the city. And so I think there's a whole toolbox of options. And when we deal with wildlife, every time we talk about wildlife, the first thing people say is we have to have a cull. We need a cull. Well, my experience is that culls can be effective at times, but are often make things worse. And so I really focus on this whole idea of having a big toolbox of options. And for coyotes, that can involve, well, certainly education is a big thing for people to be aware. I think sort of realizing that, yes, coyotes can be potentially dangerous, but in the big picture, it's not something that I lose a lot of sleep over. And I think there can be some fear mongering talking about, you know, the coyotes are out to get you and your kids. Well, we haven't really seen that in North America. It's not that it hasn't happened, but we have to balance our understanding of those risks. And then things like garbage management, for sure. Obviously, coyotes in the city are relying heavily on human provided food and even feeding them. Some people unfortunately think like bird feeders, they also could put out food for coyotes, which I think is problematic, and I certainly wouldn't endorse baiting or feeding of coyotes, especially in the city. That just creates all kinds of problems. So, you know, we have a whole list of things we could try and do, but I think we also have to look at the data first. And again, you know, with the coyotes, we haven't done that. There's a lot of decisions being made right now about coyotes without any data in hand, and I have a real problem with that, to be frank.
I have to say, we just moved back into the city in January, having lived out on an acreage for the past 12 years, and I'm really impressed what the city of Saskatoon has done with parks. I'd really never paid a whole lot of attention to it, but we live in Stonebridge, and they have Mark Thompson Park, which is a small but very natural park, and they've got some pathways through it, and they've got signage up alerting the people to possible coyote sightings there. But I know there's even a fox den in there, and I've seen the foxes as well, so it really is nice that the city is able to create this habitat as long as people, you know, deal with it properly.
Well, and that's exactly right. In biology, we talk about carrying capacity in terms of how much habitat they can support, but we also talk about cultural carrying capacity, as in how many of these animals can people deal with. And it depends on the species, of course. Foxes are much, much less of a concern compared to coyotes, compared to bears and moose. And so we have a real the ranking of animals that we have to think about, but education is fundamental to that. And also, I think people have to decide where they want to live. Do they want to be on some of these areas where we know we're going to see wildlife, or do you want to be in areas that are pretty well established that, you know, probably the biggest thing you'll see is a jackrabbit? And so we need to make those decisions, but also, yeah, I think signage and information and training is vital to this. So people at least understand what they're getting into. If they're moving into a neighborhood, what should they expect?
Hey, is there any way that you're posting these 249 photos from the trail cams the public can look at, or is that not being done?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we have a Facebook page, YXC Wildlife. Go check that out. And I have already posted the paper if people want to read all the details of what we found. I think that would be wonderful. And good. We posted some photos, and I'll actually go on there right now and post a bunch more.
Oh, good. I'll make sure we share that on Evan's show page as well. Always a pleasure. Ryan Brooke, thanks so much for your time, and keep up the great work.
Have a great day, Brent. Bye.
You bet. You too. Professor Brian Rook talking about this network of 29 trail cameras that they've had set up in Saskatoon over the past 3 years. 249 different moose photos, and talking about the challenges of urban wildlife. And yeah, once we get a minute here, I'll share that Facebook page so you can take a look at some of those photographs. None of the human ones, apparently. It's 18 after the hour. Good morning. My name is Brent Laux, filling in on the Evan Bray Show. Today, happy to be here. Evan's back tomorrow on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. On your Monday morning, 23rd day of June, did you get too much rain? Is that possible? Some areas west of Saskatoon, southwest of Saskatoon, Kindersley area south down around Eston, just a ridiculous amount of rain over the weekend. Other areas got nice amounts. I know when looking at the weather radar numerous times over the weekend, how many of you do that? Hey, you grab your phone and you have your weather app and you look at the weather radar and you look at this blob of blue and then yellow and red, different colors in there, and you're thinking, oh yeah, that's on track. And you hit the play button to see how much it moves, and you're thinking, this is going to give us some rain. And then you don't get the rain. But it looks like possibly some more rain in the forecast off and on, scattered showers over the next couple of days and on towards the end of the week. We're going to stay cool for today and tomorrow for most of the province, you know, 4 or 5 degrees below normal. That's okay. And then warmer temperatures returning midweek. I still can't get over that football game on Friday night. Like, that was just something to behold, wasn't it? As the Riders, you know, were pretty much in charge, although just way too many penalties. But the Riders really were in control of that game until late in the fourth quarter, and then Toronto Argonauts got their act together and ended up tying the game with less than 60 seconds to go. And you're thinking, oh man, we're getting to overtime. Can the Riders pull off a win here? And it was at that point that the Argonauts had to kick off after their touchdown. And that was when all the fun started for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders and their fans. And Glenn Suter and the play-by-play guy on TSN, they set it up, didn't they?
Now, do you kick it to Mario Alford?
I wouldn't.
Or do you kick it away from Mario Alford?
Alford crosses the 20 to the 30
to the 40.
He's got
what an amazing win for the Riders. As I say, the game wasn't pretty at times, but a win's a win, right? And an exciting finish to the game. As my wife says, there's no better feeling than winning, right? Absolutely right. So the Riders now 3-0. Home against the BC Lions. BC's in Regina coming up here on Saturday afternoon, 5 o'clock. Let's get a good crowd out to Mosaic, because they sure didn't have a great crowd in Toronto. I think the number was, what, around 12,000 or so. And that shot that you see most of the time across the field to the other side, the benches in Toronto, didn't look good. Didn't look good. But let's hope, you know, it's a warm-up, right? That the CFL season So we're three games in. Are we going to get better numbers? People have got their challenges these days. I get it. Maybe don't have the amount of money that you had in past years to spend on something like going to a Rider game, or maybe just, you know, with the farm economy and maybe farmers a little late with seeding this year, maybe that's had some impact as well. But let's hope for more great winning, because that always gets people in the stands as well, and bigger numbers for the Rider fan base as we cheer them on to more winning here. Hey, I just had a text from Jim Bentz, who we were speaking with earlier with Hospitality Saskatchewan, and he was talking about the challenges that a lot of business owners, hotels, restaurants, and such are finding as far as staffing. And for a myriad of reasons, changes to the immigrant worker program that are coming about, and just more and more people unable to fill the role of workers that they need in these situations. Now, Jim says he's been listening into us and some of the comments people have been making. He said the best place where most employers in Saskatchewan would post available jobs would be at saskjobs.ca. At saskjobs.ca. And I know there's filters that you can use. If you're a business owner, you're saying, well, I don't want to have applications from the other side of the world, or people that are overqualified, that sort of thing, or underqualified. So there are filters you can set up. And Jim says, the thing is, right now, most employers in the hospitality industry try to be fully staffed by this time of year as July rolls around. He says students wanting summer employment really have to start thinking about applying earlier, like in May, as employers are looking to be staffed up by mid-June or so. So just a little bit of context there from Jim Bentz, CEO of Hospitality Saskatchewan. And again, he recommends for most of the jobs in the hospitality industry that might be available, your best bet is to find them at saskjobs.ca. Lots to come still on the Evan Bray Show coming up here just after 10:30. We're going to talk to that Calgary diver that found the old Saskatchewan Chevrolet, a 1928 Chevrolet National, in what, about 100 or more feet of water in a lake near Banff. It's a really cool story. I'm sure you heard it. Everybody was talking about it about 3 weeks ago or so. But we just want to get a little more information from Alan Keller, the diver, see if there's anything more that they can add to the story. And I'll tell you about a little bit of the research we endeavored to try to figure out who might have owned that car. We didn't have any luck, but it was an interesting process that we went through. So we'll get Alan Keller joining us here coming up just after the 10:30 news. Ricky Forbes talking storm chasing. Professional storm chaser is going to be here before 11 o'clock this morning. The CEO of CJS Industrial has come out with a product to help people protect their property from wildfire. It's called Rufus. We'll hear how it works. That's coming up just after 11 o'clock this morning. And then some big news space story. You think you've seen amazing photographs from the James Webb Telescope and the Hubble Telescope? Well, there's a giant new camera on Earth that is going to blow some of those pictures away. We'll get the details from Samantha Lawler after 11:30. She's Associate Professor of Astronomy with the University of Regina. What's on your mind, Saskatchewan? Let me know. 1-877-332-8255. The Evan Bray Show on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.